This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. In recent weeks, we've talked about Hollywood mogul Harvey Weinstein and his treatment of women in Hollywood. We've talked about the all-too-common instances of sexual harassment at work. But women are not the only victims. Far from it. Today, we focus on boys and young men who are often subjected to the same power dynamics in entertainment and elsewhere as girls and women. This week, actor Anthony Rapp, he's in Star Trek Discovery, went public with allegations that Kevin Spacey made unwanted sexual advances toward him when Rapp was just 14. Spacey was 26 at the time, and he issued an apology in response. Now, some in Hollywood say this kind of predation, a modern-day extension of the old casting couch, is something of an open secret. And before we continue, we would be remiss if we did not note that this conversation is hitting home for us here because it takes place against accusations that have been made by a number of women against the head of NPR News, Michael Oreskes. He's on leave right now. 1A is produced independently. NPR is our distributor. And in a statement, the network said, quote, "We take these kinds of allegations very seriously. If a concern is raised, we review the matter promptly and take appropriate steps as warranted to assure a safe, comfortable, and productive work environment. As a matter of policy, we do not comment on personnel matters," unquote. You'll find more on this from NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik on your NPR member station and online at npr.org. All right, let's talk further about Hollywood now. Joining us from Newton, Massachusetts is Matthew Valentinus, the producer of a documentary film called An Open Secret about sexual abuse of teenage boys in Hollywood. He's also an entertainment lawyer. Matthew, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Joining us from NPR West in Culver City, California is Adam B. Vary, the senior film reporter for BuzzFeed News based in Los Angeles. Adam, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Milena Rizik. She's a culture reporter for The New York Times, joining us from New York. Milena, glad to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
We'd love to hear from you, too, with your questions and thoughts about this. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Already, a number of you have reached out to us by voicemail. Here is just one of the messages we got in our inbox.
I was raped as a boy when I was 8 years old. And I just recently spoke out about it in response to the Me Too social media response campaign that is currently filtering the social media airwaves. And I'm speaking about it now because I think there are many boys and also boys who are now men who have similar experiences, who don't talk about it, who still feel shame and are still suffering in silence. And I think it's time for that silence to end. Because in order for us to heal, in order for us not to act in ways that are negative in response to the pain that we are may feeling, we have to talk about it openly and honestly. Thank you so much for bringing this topic into the light, because it's a topic that must be continued to talk about.
No, thank you for sharing your story. Much appreciated. And Matthew Valentinus, I wonder if that's a good place to start. Our listener talked about feeling shame, about suffering and silence. Why do you think that so many victims of this are suffering in silence? Is it just the sheer shame of it, or is there more to it?
It's much darker than that. This is a very well-coordinated, planned-out grooming system in Hollywood that is very well organized, and they pick the most susceptible children that they can, and then they control them not only throughout their careers, but they often get them addicted to drugs. They keep them within certain circles. They pass them around as they get more successful, and then they can control their career track. They get them emancipated from school. Often the parents aren't around. They might be, you know, in another part of the country, and these young children are living with their managers or their agents, or they might be coming from broken homes. So the reason why we chose in the documentary An Open Secret, we chose Hollywood, is not that this problem doesn't affect the rest of the country and the world. Of course it does. It's just that it's far more exaggerated in Hollywood, because the people that prey on young boys in Hollywood are far more sophisticated, they have far more wealth, and they're also able to entice these boys with fame and celebrity. And instead of taking them to an ice cream shop, they can put them in a movie, they can fly them to London on a jet and take them to a premiere. And that's how they operate. That's what we've seen and what we've experienced.
Adam B. Vera, you broke the Anthony Rapp story on BuzzFeed News. You mentioned in the story that you knew Mr. Rapp, which may have been partly why he felt comfortable telling you his story. But I wonder what sense you got from him as to why he was sharing his story now, what he wanted to come of it, and so on.
He decided to share his story now because he was so moved by the multitudes of women who were coming forward in the wake of the Harvey Weinstein scandal. And, you know, he had been telling this story to close friends and colleagues since the 1990s. And in a way to at least get the word out within his circle and within sort of industry circles. But he realized, you know, as he says in our story, he was awake to the moment we are all living in. And he felt like this was the best time to not only speak up, but also to be heard. I think what we're seeing in the last month or so is a real turning point in how we listen to victims of sexual assault and harassment and deal with the consequences of that behavior with the perpetrators. So Anthony felt like this was the best time to have the biggest impact. And I feel like hopefully it really is having the impact that Anthony and I was hoping that story would have.
I also wonder, Adam, the response to this, part of Kevin Spacey's response was to come out as gay. It was something that had been rumored for some time. A number of people, I think most LGBT celebrities at least that I've heard, have really railed against this as a diversion or an attempt to deflect from his actions. What do you think?
You know, I don't want to ascribe too many motives to Mr. Spacey's decision to do that, other than to note two things. One, Mr. Spacey did not acknowledge Anthony Rapp's age at all in his statement. And number two, on Sunday night, when that story was first breaking and Mr. Spacey issued his apology and decided to come out in that statement, a lot of media outlets led with the fact that Kevin Spacey was coming out, and in some headlines even neglected to note the reason why. So it really did, I think, strike people as a deflection. The other thing about that, the other thing that I think was causing so much frustration and anger is the conflation of, as Mr. Spacey put it, living as a gay man with the allegation at hand that he made a sexual advance to a 14-year-old boy.
Right.
And, you know, living as a gay man has nothing to do with what Mr. Spacey is alleged to have done. So putting that sentiment in that statement conflated two ideas that are really, for the LGBTQ community, I think, have nothing to do with each other.
Melena Ryzyk, on Monday, Netflix announced this would be the last season of the hit political drama House of Cards, which Spacey stars in. Yesterday, Netflix announced it's stopping production of the show, but Netflix told The Times that its decision to make this season the last one had been reached way before the Spacey allegations surfaced. Talk about the kind of a quandary that this puts a film or TV production company in. I would guess that in the past, when these kinds of things were an open secret, studios might not have felt as compelled to take the step that Netflix took with House of Cards. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely puts the production in a strange position. And Netflix said that they were stopping production to examine the issue and deal with it. And, you know, executives came to the set in Baltimore, and Kevin Spacey was not apparently on set yet for the production, but they came to the set and talked to the cast and crew about these issues. So what we're seeing now is institutions with which, you know, Kevin Spacey was associated having to grapple with these allegations and any other behavior that might have happened when he worked with them. The Old Vic Theater in London, where he was an artistic director for many years, has also set up a sort of tips line or a line for people to voice any complaints or issues that they had. So one story, this one, you know, Adam's story and one person's allegation now has this ripple effect across the industry in a way that might not have happened at another moment in time.
We are speaking to Milena Rizik, cultural reporter for The New York Times, Adam B. Vary, the senior film reporter for BuzzFeed News, Matthew Valentinus, the producer of the documentary An Open Secret, and with you. We welcome your questions, comments, and stories about this. Email us 1A@WAMU.org. Comment on our Facebook page or tweet us at 1A, especially if you do have specific stories to share about your experiences in entertainment, whether or not any of this rings true to you through your personal experience. 1A@WAMU.org. And before we go too much farther, we know that some of you may be listening and these stories resonate with you directly. You may not be ready to talk to us, but you might need to talk to someone. I have a hotline number for you that you may want to call. It's a group called RAIN, the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. So it's RAIN with two N's. It's a free hotline, confidential for survivors of sexual assault. Here's the number. I'll read it twice. 800-656-HOPE, 800-656-4673. You can also chat online anonymously at RAIN.org. That's RAIN with two N's, Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, RAINN.org. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Michelle tweets, Hollywood's responsibility to keep young people safe? Let's talk first about the parents' job. How about parents who allow kids to get into this fix in the first place? Don't put kids in that situation. Matthew, what do you think? How much of this does rest on parents?
I think a lot rests of it on parents, but I hate to see people that aren't too familiar with this entire process. That's one of their first reactions, is to jump on the parents. But yes, the predators figure out which parents to sort of groom, and they're constantly pushing boundaries. And I think if you watch our film in the movie, you see how one of these predators basically inserts himself in the family over a period of months and years. So it's not that it's always a bad family, and I hate to judge parents in that way. You know, that's kind of a rough comment, and I don't always agree with it. But of course, the parents have to be constantly vigilant and constantly asking their children if any of these things are going on. And that's what we try and teach in this film, is to look for grooming tactics that these predators use.
Speaking of which, let's listen to a clip from the documentary called An Open Secret. This is former child star Corey Feldman. Those of you who saw the movie The Lost Boys might remember him. This is him talking about his experience in Hollywood.
I can tell you that the number one problem in Hollywood was and is and always will be pedophilia. There was a circle of older men, and they all had either their own power or connections to great power that surrounded themselves around this group of kids.
And it's widespread?
Oh, yeah. I was surrounded by them. They were everywhere, like vultures.
That's Corey Feldman, the child actor from The Lost Boys and The Goonies and Gremlins and Stand By Me in the documentary An Open Secret. Matt, when a teenage boy, a young man, a kid is harassed, abused, or even witnesses what Corey Feldman describes, what are their options for doing something about it?
Well, in our film, we were able to show two confessions, and both of those were with recordings, which unfortunately could not be used in a court of law. So there really isn't much that we can do. I think laws needs to be changed where perhaps a young child can record something and maybe it can be submitted in court. But generally, without a taped confession, that's why these cases are so hard. It comes down to a he said, she said. And if the child doesn't tell their parent or the company right away, it often goes unnoticed for 5-10 years, and it takes them 10 or 20 years to really come to terms with it. So it's up to the parents to bring it out of the children, and then they need to go to a lawyer and the police and report as soon as possible. Because in our film, there's one case of a boy named Evan who was abused at 11, and he finally brings his case by the time he's 18. And that's usually very rare for a kid to come to terms with what happened to them. And often by the time that people come to terms with their sexual abuse, the statute of limitations has passed. Now, I know the law recently just changed on that, but that doesn't affect all the cases that have happened in the last 20 or 30 years. So that's the issue, is really educating kids to be able to come forward. And that's the goal of our film, is to get people to start talking about this. And we've had, I even emailed Adam yesterday, so I'm glad he's on this call, because you know, we've had so many people reach out to us that I have somebody I want Adam to talk to who's deep inside one of these pedophile rings.
Well, you know, Adam, I wonder if, before we have to pause, if we could get to one more comment. Brian in Bartlett, New Hampshire writes, "What does all of this say about the way we as a society put so much power in the form of money in the hands of so few in a completely non-essential industry? It's entertainment, and yet we lavish money on these people like they're our saviors. Power corrupts absolutely, and in these cases, it's in the hands of immature, vain, and egotistical people." Before we have to break, I wonder, Adam, if this is changing the way that Hollywood looks at the way it empowers people to make these kinds of decisions and the oversight that they have to deal with, briefly.
Yeah, I think that that is something that the industry is really grappling with right now. The Motion Picture Academy announced that they're going to be putting some sort of process in place, at least for their own membership. I think individual studios have been going through sexual harassment training over the last few weeks. And I think the guilds and unions are also going to be, I think, looking at infrastructures to put in place to perhaps at least make this less institutionalized, this kind of power imbalance. Whether or not it affects major change, we really won't know for a matter of months, if not years. But I do think that the industry is definitely looking at all of these issues and really seriously thinking about how to prevent this kind of abuse of men, of young boys, of women, basically just this kind of abuse of power to prevent that kind of thing from happening in the future.
Alice writes in, "I'm sorry, but this is too soon. It's like screaming Blue Lives Matter after a black person is shot. Women are almost exclusively the victims of sexual harassment and assault, and it's not from anyone but men. We need to solve this problem that men have before we water it down with other abuse. I do believe the only real solution is to get more women in positions of power." What about that? Is now the time to have this conversation? I mean, Hollywood is still dealing with the whole Harvey Weinstein thing. Does the industry really have the capacity to solve two problems at once? Or can this problem even wait any longer? Stay close. Back now to our conversation with documentary filmmaker Matthew Valentinus, Adam B. Vary of BuzzFeed News, and Milena Rysik of The New York Times. Alice writes, "I'm sorry, but this is too soon. It's like screaming Blue Lives Matter after a black person is shot. Women are almost exclusively the victims of sexual harassment and assault, and it's not from anyone but men. We need to solve this problem that men have before we water it down with other abuse. I do believe the only real solution is to get more women in positions of power." Adam, what do you think of Alice's comment?
I completely understand where she's coming from. I think that there are real differences from abuse of adults who are women versus abuse of adults who are men. You know, I think that there are real differences in how that is sort of placed on the blame that a woman feels for experiencing that kind of abuse because of societal pressures. But I would just say that I think at the end of the day, the real issue here is abuse of power by men. And that power can be abused with women. It can be abused with men. It can be abused with people who are, under the age of consent. It's really about a power imbalance. You know, Hollywood is just populated with so many monumentally wealthy people in a culture of permissiveness, and it's organized around the idea of youth and unattainable beauty, whether that beauty is male or female. So it's something that is sort of baked into the industry, and I also think that her solution is a good solution to create more equity within the power structure of gender would, I think, certainly help with at least some of the abuses that we're seeing.
Melena Rysik, what do you think of Alice's comment? Is it too soon to have this conversation, and is getting more women in positions of power the only real solution? What do you think?
Well, I agree that I totally understand where she is coming from. I think speaking as a reporter, I am in favor of openness and having conversations and shining a light on problems as soon as people are ready to talk about those problems. You know, whether that would put a strain on the powers that be to respond, that's another issue. But absolutely, you know, I do think, especially in Hollywood and really in any industry, having more women and a diverse array of people in power would help the power imbalances that allow for some of this predation to happen.
Anne is listening from Boca Raton, Florida. She writes, I'm appalled at the charges coming out of Hollywood, but with regard to Kevin Spacey, I'm less inclined to get on the bandwagon. It seems this was a drunken, stumbling action that barely crossed any lines, no coercion or force used. At parties where people are drinking and someone tries to kiss or hug an unwilling partygoer, the drunk gets pushed away and no one cries sexual harassment. I know the alleged victim here was only 14, but based on the information, I'm surprised it was publicized as harassment, and sorry, it might ruin Kevin Spacey's career. Adam, what do you think of Anne's comment?
First I would point out that since we've published our story, there have been other stories of inappropriate behavior by Mr. Spacey that have come forward. The BBC just this morning published an account from someone speaking anonymously about an incident that happened prior to what Anthony went through with a 17-year-old boy. I would just say, first of all, Anthony was 14, and that to me is the sort of almost the beginning and the end of the conversation. The power imbalance is so enormous when you're dealing with somebody at that age, that regardless of the perceived maturity of that child, I mean, Anthony talked about in our story how he was, as a child actor, so used to being in the company of adults and had no real issue with that experience, that the idea of attending a party held by a fellow actor that was all adults was not out of the ordinary for him, especially sort of in a different era in the 1980s. Regardless of that kind of life experience, regardless of how mature that child may seem, that it's still a child. And, I think that this kind of behavior, you know, whether or not the person's drunk, I just don't know how I can have a conversation with a person who can't, who somehow is able to set aside the fact of Anthony's age at that time. And so, also I would just reiterate that more allegations about Mr. Spacey are coming to light right now.
And I think we should also be clear, it's not like, you know, just to eradicate any confusion for those of you who may not have seen the BuzzFeed piece, Anthony Rapp at 14 years old, this wasn't one of those cases where, Adam, you could say, oh, well, he was big for his age. He looked like he was older. He looks like a child. He looks like a little boy.
Yeah, Anthony says that he's always looked young for his age. He's 46 now, and he looks much younger. So and that was unmistakable to Mr. Spacey. In fact, prior to this party, Mr. Spacey was alleged to have taken Anthony and a 17-year-old friend of his to a nightclub and got them in without having to show ID. So it was very, Anthony's age was readily apparent to Mr. Spacey at the time that this incident was alleged to have happened.
Melena, I'd love to get your take on Atiana's tweet. Atiana writes, it took many women coming forward to take down Weinstein. With Spacey, it seems to be just one story. Do men's voices carry more weight?
Well, I saw that tweet too, and I thought it was an interesting point of view. I mean, it's certainly possible that the circumstances of this case, whether it's the fact that it was a boy or the fact that it was, a child, made it have a little bit more weight in moving the conversation around Kevin Spacey's alleged actions forward. I want to say one other thing about the previous comment that one thing that's notable about these stories, and I think one thing that was really powerful in the Me Too movement, is the impact that these interactions had on the alleged victims. I mean, you as somebody hearing the story might think, you know, about it one way, but the way that refracts in the person's life and the way they think about it and the way they carry it with them, there's no way to talk about these happenings and say it didn't matter, because to the person that it may have happened to, it mattered quite a lot, and it may have in some ways changed the way their life went. So it's not for us to sort of dismiss these allegations.
Chip in Richmond, Virginia asks, I wonder how many young performers might trace their addiction to drugs and or alcohol to sexual abuse by adults who took advantage of them as they tried to become stars. Matthew?
The drugs and alcohol are introduced later, and they are used to control them. There are a lot of cold cases starting in the 80s through the 90s that I think a lot of investigators will start taking another look at, where kids are introduced to drugs by these pedophiles, and it is how they control them and manipulate them. One person I think who should be looked at closely is Brad Renfro and the circumstances of his death. You know, even with Corey Haim, I think he was introduced to the drugs. It's not that he was doing the drugs first and then he fell into this. It is something that they use to get these kids addicted. And that really should be where the attention is focused. This is a highly coordinated, organized group of people who have, it's almost like a level of hierarchy where there's certain people who scout young boys and then they pass them up to different parties where, you know, people will pick out who they want. And one person to look at just last week is the arrest of Tyler Grasham at APA, who represents, you know, some of the leading young child actors today. Who does he hang out with? Who got him his job? That's what I'm talking about. There's a lot of connections here. Kevin Spacey is very good friends with Bryan Singer. There's been a lot of accusations against Bryan Singer. Bryan Singer has hung out with a lot of convicted pedophiles. I think the American public is not aware of how bad this situation is. And that woman from Florida was trying to give Kevin Spacey the benefit of the doubt. And what I'm trying to tell her is, don't give him the benefit of the doubt. What you don't know will amaze you.
Well, here's what I don't fully understand, Matthew. I mean, all of these studios are publicly traded companies, every single one of them, and with the exception of you know, I mean, well, no, I mean, pretty much all of the major movie studios are publicly traded. They have shareholders and investors, billions of dollars at stake. Billions of dollars can be at stake on a single movie. It would seem to me that these allegations, if they became public, if they were substantiated, one of them could force any of these studios to basically buckle, and it can have a chain reaction effect. Why doesn't someone from the top of these studios, why aren't we hearing from the, you know, the big names, the Kevin Tsujiharas and the Jim Giannopoulos's and the Alan Horns and so on, saying we are going to clean house at our studio and send a message?
Because it's so bad and they're so liable that I think you're going to see Disney and Fox have major lawsuits brought against them that could bring down those companies. What I think is going to happen is the smarter digital companies like Amazon with Price, they just fired him quickly. They're going to nip it in the bud. And companies like Amazon, Facebook, Netflix, Google, YouTube Red, they're going to come in and just clean up the carcasses, because the studios are so infested with these cases that it's going to make the church scandal look like nothing.
Can I jump in here?
Yes, briefly.
So I would just also add that I completely agree with that, Matthew, in that this is a pervasive problem that the industry is going to have to deal with. But I also think that it's important to note that this is, first of all, an old problem of Hollywood's. This dates back to the golden age of Hollywood. And we can talk more about that if you'd like. But also, you know, this is something that is, you know, denial is an enormously powerful psychological event.
Right.
And, you know, when I would note that, George Clooney, when he was asked about the Harvey Weinstein scandal, I think to the Daily Beast, this is a sentiment that has really resonated, I think, in the weeks following that interview, in which he said, you know, I don't think that people were necessarily even looking the other way. It's that they weren't even looking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you are dealing with people who are enormously powerful, that are enormously wealthy, that is an overwhelming thing. And we see that in multiple industries. We saw that in the cases of what was going on at Fox News. And it's still,
right.
Those stories are still breaking. So it's, you know, I think it's as much about imbalance of power and enormous wealth within any industry can foster this kind of behavior.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Let's hear one more clip from the documentary. I know we're really low on time, but I just wanted to play one more piece. This is Anne Henry, the co-founder of a group called Biz Parents. Again, a clip from the documentary, An Open Secret.
It's unheard of that a child would be able to step forward at the time of their abuse when they're still a minor and continue to work afterward. I can't think of a single example where that's happened. So a kid that wants to speak out and say what happened to them beyond their family would truly have to give up their career. It's very sad that that's the case, but it's a reality.
That's Anne Henry, the co-founder of Biz Parents. Matthew Valentinus, very briefly, I wonder what you see that parents can do to protect their children in the industry.
Well, I think SAG needs to really step up and give parents an outlet, a place to go.
SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, the union that represents film actors.
Right. They don't really help Anne Henry. And if you watch the film, she tries to raise an issue that SAG covers about a child molester involved in the Young Performers Committee. And SAG even tried to sue us and censor this film. So I think the industry itself needs, I don't even know if they have anything set up to help children right now. That's another question. No one's asking SAG these questions. What are you doing for children?
Brenda asked, aren't there laws in place for the treatment of minors working in the movie industry? Do these laws only cover working hours and pay? Adam, are there laws?
There are laws. I think that one thing that we're discovering is that, you know, you can, and I would also just point out that, you know, there are a large number of child actors who are able to go through the industry and not be abused. And there are many, many people who work in the entertainment industry who are upstanding citizens and law abiding. It's more about, you know, the fact that then there's the industry fosters an environment that allows predators to thrive. And one of the things that I think the entire industry is going to be grappling with is perhaps creating new kinds of restrictions and guidelines and oversight that would keep any kind of abuse from happening. And the other risk about that is, of course, to make sure that that structure is also not then harming the people who are potential victims by, you know, making it actually harder for them to have a career. That's the balance that's often difficult to strike with this kind of thing.
And finally, briefly, Milena, are we at a tipping point now? Do we see that this is beginning to change in substantive ways, or are we still trying, or is Hollywood still trying to find its way forward? Briefly.
I think everyone is hoping it's a tipping point, but you know, it's a little bit too soon to say. I think what we can do as a culture, and what I'm hopeful that all of these stories and coverage is doing, is allowing our culture to be a place where we can talk about these things and people's stories are believed. Because one of the things that keeps people from talking about this is the idea that no one will care, that their voice will not be heard. And I think conversations like this will hopefully change that dynamic.
One more comment, if we could, from Michelle regarding this kind of forward process. She works as a therapist, and her comment is basically about toxic masculinity. Michelle writes, men are not allowed to be vulnerable, to not feel anything but anger, and if they do, they're sometimes ridiculed as being feminine. Sometimes the therapeutic work with adult males who were molested is to help them begin to acknowledge other feelings. I have sat with grown men who've trained their nervous systems to shut down. It makes for a long detour to healing. Milena Ryzik is a culture reporter for the New York Times. Milena, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Adam B. Vary is the senior film reporter for BuzzFeed News, who broke the story from Anthony Rapp. Adam, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And documentary filmmaker Matthew Valentinus, his film is called An Open Secret. Thank you, Matthew.
Thanks for having me.
Two more things I should note before we let you go. First of all, we mentioned Michael Oreskes, the head of NPR News, who is on leave following allegations of inappropriate actions with coworkers. NPR's David Folkenflik reports that Chris Turpin, who is the senior VP for news, is now the acting news chief. Mr. Turpin was the head of NPR News before Michael Oreskes was appointed. We'll have more on that story from NPR News through the day. Also, that hotline I mentioned from Rain, the number one more time, 800-656-HOPE. The website is Rain, RAINN.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.